present my work. So, today I'm going to talk about holographic description of quantum field theory, and hopefully this title becomes clear by the end of this talk. So the motivation is that there are a lot of strongly coupled quantum field theories in nature, like quantum phase transition in 2 plus 1D and non-form liquid phases, QCD, but usually they are very hard to understand, and we don't have a systematic way of understanding them until now. And one of the difficulties is that it's not easy to identify low energy degrees freedom when coupling is strong. But in some set of strongly coupled field theories, what happened is that even though microscopic degree freedoms are very incoherent due to strong coupling, but yeah, I think this is for recording. Okay, yeah, I will speak.
Okay.
But in some set of strongly coupled theory, even though microscopic theory freedoms are very incoherent, in the low energy limit, some new weakly coupled theory freedom emerges, so that you can understand the strong coupling physics of those microscopic theory freedoms through almost classical new emergent theory freedom. For example, in 3 plus 1D, we know that when electric degree freedoms are strongly coupled, we better understand them through magnetic degree freedom, because they are weakly coupled in the strong coupling limit of electric degree freedom. And sometimes what emerges at low energy carry different quantum number than microscopic degree freedom. And more drastically, sometimes this emergent classical degree freedoms can live in different space-time than the original theory. This is one of the basic ideas of ADS-CFT, and this idea was originally proposed in the context of string theory, but it may well be that the underlying principle is much more general, so that we can understand even those theories that cannot be embedded in the framework of string theory. So before I discuss about ADS-CFT and this holography, I will first start by reviewing some simple physics in fractionalizations and say a few words on ADS-CFT, and then switch gear to the main topic to construct a prescription that gives us some holographic description for general quantum field theory. And then I will conclude. So suppose we have some 3 plus 1-dimensional Euclidean lattice, space and time. And at each point in space, at each point on the lattice, there is some xy spins. And this xy spins carries, say, two flavor index, say, one flavor and one anti-flavor. And this is just the XY model, kinetic energy of bosons. And suppose these bosons are interacting with each other so that, say, boson AB and boson BC collide and become boson AC, preserving Potter flavor. And suppose the interaction is very large compared to the kinetic energy, then we first want to minimize this potential energy. And in the configurational space of this boson phase, there is some low-dimensional manifold which satisfies this dynamical constraint, which arises due to this strong interaction. And it happens that this low-energy manifold is parameterized by another boson field, and this boson field carries only one flavor quantum number instead of two. So one can write down the low energy effective theory for this new degree freedom, which carries only one flavor quantum number. And the kinetic energy of this original boson get factorized into in this form. And then
for each pair of flavors?
Theta AB is a, yeah, it's phase, a flavor for...
It's a phase for each pair of flavors.
Right, yeah. And then
due to this factorization, we can view this new boson propagating in the background of some almost classical field that is generated by themselves. And in the larger limit, there are cancellation between different flavors. So this background degree freedom become almost classical. And therefore, in the larger limit, what emerges as low energy effective theory is a theory for this boson, which carries only one flavor quantum number. And this is fractionalization, because low energy degree freedom carry only one flavor quantum number. Of course, this boson is not gauge invariant particle, mainly due to the fact that when we parameterize this low energy manifold, there is a redundancy. However, in the larger limit, because the fluctuations of this background field is so weak, this emergent particle acquires almost classical identity. So they behave as if they are free bosons. And then we can understand this strongly coupled meson-like original boson in terms of this almost free theory for this fractionalized boson. And let's switch gear to ADS-CFT. And actually, there's a technological application of this idea already. So basic idea is that suppose we have 2D images. And if 2D images satisfy certain condition, then it's much easier to understand this image in terms of three-dimensional image than two-dimensional image, suppose. So if we just look at this 3D TV without any glass, it looks very fuzzy, looks very quantum, right? But if we choose to process this infrared and IR image in different parts of our brain through some glass, then this image look almost three-dimensional and very classical. Okay. So likewise, in some field theory, d-dimensional quantum field theory satisfies such condition, then sometimes it's much easier to understand the theory from a d+1 dimensional point of view rather than d-dimensional theory. So this anti-distance space and conformal field theory correspondence is one concrete idea or conjecture that realizes this idea. So suppose we have a d-dimensional theory where the partition function is given by functional integrations of these d-dimensional fields with certain source. And then we can view this partition function as a functional integrations of some d+1 dimensional degrees freedom, okay, with some local action. And then this information on the boundary theories, for example, this source field is given by some boundary condition on this d+1 dimensional theory. And this additional dimension Z, in this case, corresponds to some redundant energy scales. And then, of course, this, because of this redundancy, the bulk space and time, the d+1 dimensional space and time, is not gauge invariant. But in certain limit, in certain large and certain strong coupling limit, this d+1 dimensional theory become much simpler and almost classical. So we can compute this very quantum partition function using some classical approximation in terms of this d+1 dimensional theory. And there are some concrete examples for this kind of correspondence. But what I'm trying to say today is that there is a a more general connection.
I will say more words on that.
Okay.
Yeah. It will become more clear through an example.
So, according to this duality, if I have, say, d-dimensional flat space where this original field theory is defined, then for every operator that we can deform in this field theory, there is a field in the Borg. And the scaling dimension of that operator corresponds to mass of the field in the Borg. And then the equation of motion in the Borg for this field is nothing but the beta function for the source field that deforms with corresponding operator. So that's kind of basic dictionary. In that sense, we can view this additional dimension as some coarse graining scale or energy scale.
It's a little confusing because the equations of motion are second order, and the beta function equations are first order.
Right.
So how do you make that more precise?
Yeah, so we have to impose additional boundary condition inside the part, which is some infrared, which includes some dynamic information about the infrared physics.
I mean, couldn't you say that's one of the advantages here because the flow is not just one way, that infrared physics
you can work back. Effects. Yeah, it's both. It's also a disadvantage because if you don't know the infrared physics, you don't know which boundary can be flows.
Right.
that's a very good point. Actually, in this general prescription, the infrared boundary condition is imposed rather dynamically rather than by some fixed condition. So without knowing the infrared physics in the first hand, it's very hard to construct a classical Higgs field, which is a reflection of a principle of no free energy.
But in a way, it's because of that two-way connection that it's so useful for transport properties.
Absolutely. If you want to assume something about the infrared and then determine things, yeah,
right.
That's
yeah.
Great. Yeah.
There's some very well-defined set of examples. There's no prescription that gives this holographic dual theory for a general quantum field theory. And this talk is an attempt to come up with a general prescription, namely to come up with this GLASS or 3D TV. So I will try to explain the general prescription through some concrete examples. So this is one of the simplest field theory, a zero-dimensional field theory. So there's no space and time. And partition function is given by just integration of one variable, phi. And there's an action. There's some quadratic action with mass m. Then this free theory is deformed by some perturbation. And this perturbation don't have to be small, necessarily. And my goal is to compute effectively this partition function. The single variable, scalar variable. Yeah, just integration. So much difficult way of doing integration.
And then what I'm going to do is to do some real space RG. And usually we divide this degrees freedom into low energy and high energy degrees freedom, and then integrate out high energy modes to construct a low energy effective action. And there is a very systematic way of doing that by Polchinski. So first step is to introduce an auxiliary field, and this doesn't have any physical meaning at this point. And then now we change our basis, which mix this auxiliary field and the physical field and transform into a new basis, this small phi and small phi tilde. So now I will call this small phi as low energy field and small phi tilde in the high energy field for the following sense. So we choose these coefficients in such a way that the action in terms of this new variable has this following form. where the original physical field is given by some of this low energy and high energy field. And the mass of the low energy field, which is M prime, is slightly larger than the original mass M by certain factor. So here alpha is certain positive constant and dz is like infinitesimal RLG parameter. So I make the mass slightly larger for this small phi, and the mass of this new high energy field become very large, order of 1 over dz. So dz is a small parameter. And we can always choose this coefficient in this way. And then this is just an auxiliary field that I just add. I just added, yeah. They are decoupled at this level. But I just changed the basis so that there's some mixing between this new variable. So here,
why don't you have a more generic term for phi tilt?
Oh, that's my choice.
No, no, the little phi tilt.
Here, yeah, we can already choose it.
Because there's a, the big phi tilt is non-linear.
No, this is just quadrant.
Oh, right? I see, okay.
What is S of M here?
Yeah, S of M is M squared phi squared, yeah.
So there is a scale mu, disappears at scale?
Yeah, or? Yeah, it disappears from, this is arbitrary constant, mm-hmm. So it doesn't have to affect, should not affect.
So what tells you what's high and what's low?
Yeah, so I will explain this. So here, the mass of this new field, phi, is slightly larger than the original mass. And therefore, the quantum fluctuation of this new field is slightly smaller than the original physical field. But therefore, there's some missing quantum fluctuation, and that information has been transferred into this very massive field. Okay? So this very massive field now acquires some physical identity due to this mixing. And it takes away a little bit of quantum fluctuation. Yeah, yeah. So that's the coupling between low energy mode and high energy mode. That's usually what happens in. No, that's important. Sorry?
So
you know, in RG, usually in the momentum space, for example. Yeah.
But this SJ, this action SJ, is the same as the original one.
That's right.
If it's 1/5 plus pi 2, it's just doing 5. One link
is also, you choose A and B such that it's the cross term is 0.
In the quadrant level.
It's the same, right? It's the same.
And then, the action has changed, so we rescale our fields in such a way that, say, the quadratic action for the low energy field become the same action as the bare action, and this is usually what we do in RG. And then this coupling and the mass for the high energy field get rescaled by this some factor. And usually at this stage, what we do is to integrate out high energy mode to obtain some effective action for the low energy mode alone, with a fixed set of coupling constants. That gives the beta function. But instead of doing that, we can expand this action in power series of, say, low energy field. And then the coefficient of this low energy field includes not only this coupling constant, but also this fluctuating high energy field. And then we can view this constant as some dynamical fluctuating source field for the low energy field. Okay. And then now we can view this, there's some low energy effective action with a dynamical source field. Okay. That's what I'm going to do. So we can make it more explicit by decoupling the low energy field and high energy field by introducing some auxiliary field. For example, if I look at, there's a coupling between low energy field and high energy field, that's very important. That
gives rise to quantum correction to the low energy physics. And then I introduce a new variable, J prime. This is a fluctuating source field for low energy field. But there is a constraint that this source for the low energy field is, should be given by this high energy field. And that constraint is imposed by this Lagrangian multiplier P. Okay. And I do that for every coupling. And here, the physical meaning is that this J prime is now, instead of fixed coupling, it's a fluctuating source for the low energy field. And P is a conjugate field to J. It's like in the action, there's some I times X term, so like a very fast term. And if you look at the equation of motion P, the expectation value of this auxiliary field is given by the expectation value of physical operator. So J is fluctuating source, and P is a fluctuation of the expectation value of the operator. That's the physical meaning. Of course, at this stage, these J's and P's have no dynamics. They are just pure Lagrangian multipliers. But once, at this stage, now we integrate out this high energy field, phi tilde, and then some non-trivial dynamics is generated for this auxiliary field, P and J. And it becomes propagating mode.
But I think
it was... that's also a good point. And one can do exactly in the limit where dz is small. So...
Yeah, that's right.
So we decimate the highest
fluctuation only by small, so that at each stage we have a full control. So to the order of dz, you have only a few diagrams to compute the effective motion. So then the partition function is given by the integration of the low energy field and this fluctuating source, J prime, and the conjugate variable, where this low energy field is coupled with this source field, and this dynamics of this fluctuating source field is controlled by certain action generated by this high energy mode. And then one can repeat the same procedure for the low energy field as we do for RG. So we decimate some high energy fluctuations again, and then we introduce new set of fluctuating source field and conjugate field at each stage of this RG. Okay. And then at the end of day, after eliminating all quantum fluctuations of the original field, the partition function is written by now functional integration of one-dimensional field, J and P, which is defined on semi-infinite line, okay, instead of just one by integration. So it becomes a... That's right. The RG step becomes one new direction. Oh, this is just
N for the coupling. Source for the phi to the N. And then the boundary information is imposed in, by constraint that this field is a fluctuating field, but at the boundary, the value has to be fixed by the bare coupling of the field.
Yeah, original field is gone, and now dynamical variable is a fluctuating source.
How local is the resulting expression in Z?
It's a completely local.
Is that an artifact of the approximation?
No, there's no approximation at this. So I will comment more on the locality, which is also very important.
How did the RG labeled K get transmitted into a spatial coordinate?
So we make dz very, very small. Then it becomes continuous.
I mean, there was a sum over...
Yeah, initially it was sum, actually sum over some action at each step. But each action is very small when I disseminate only small high energy fluctuation, therefore I can convert this into integration in one higher dimension.
So can I think about the original NSAS as some kind of Lovaas-Pitanovich transformation? Or?
Right, yeah. So mathematically, it's exactly the
abundance transformation, which decouples the low energy field and high energy field. And this abundance transformation field becomes dynamical, as if gauge field becomes dynamical
Can you repeat step five? I didn't quite. You did. You said you integrated at phi tilde, but you replaced it by this other integral.
Right, and then.
So that's something I'm not familiar with. How did that?
So here. So after introducing this p and j, the partition function is given by integration over phi and phi tilde and p and j. Right. And then now we integrate a phi tilde. And then we have this form. Phi tilde is gone. Right. That's right. That's the Lagrange multiplier. But instead of doing the integration p first, we do the integration of phi tilde first.
Is this like some sort of functional Fourier transform or something?
Yeah, you can deal in that.
You have like field times its conjugate. Added to the action, e to the I. Mm-hmm.
So I have some bare theory, and then I decimate high energy fluctuation one by one by infinitesimal step, and at each step I introduce some fluctuating source field, and then the theory is given by a function integration of this one dimensional source field whose boundary condition is fixed by this bare coupling. So it's a quantum in the bulk, but there's some classical trajectory which is given by some three-level scaling of this source field. So if we ignore all quantum fluctuation, then it follows this classical path. So there's also this is a local action for the one-dimensional theory for this zero-dimensional. Dual to this zero-dimensional theory, and there's some arbitrary parameter alpha. This alpha has been introduced when I coarse grain the high energy mode. So mass has been increased by some factor of alpha. So in this sense, alpha is the speed of my RZ flow. If I make alpha large, then I decimate high energy fluctuation by a large amount at one step. Okay. But as we know in field theory, there's a reparametrization symmetry along the RZ flow. We can choose different speed of RZ at each different step. So I could have make this alpha to be scale dependent. So I could have make alpha to be function of Z without changing any physics. So this is a reparametrization symmetry, which is nothing but some diffeomorphism symmetry in one dimension. Because of this reason, the theory you get in bulk is nothing but one-dimensional gravitational theory. So here, if you look at this Lagrangian, this is nothing but the one-dimensional gravitational action in the ADM formalism, in some Hamiltonian formalism, where if you look at this alpha now as some lapsed function, this is like a metric in one higher dimension. And there's a reparametrization symmetry.
You
In Hamiltonian formalism, there's only first derivative, right? If you integrate out this p, then you will get some second derivative.
That's correct. Oh, I see.
This is like ABM formalism for gravity.
What you have is like h equal to l minus p dot q.
Yeah. This is the p. Yes. This is p times x dot times some. Lagrange multiplier, which is less function, and Hamiltonian.
Hmm. Where is the original action gone?
Isn't there it out? Isn't there it out?
No, there was a coupling constant in the original action.
That is imposed by the boundary condition.
So this action is very general, independent of the.
Yeah, if you change the coupling in the original theory, you just change the UV boundary condition. Which is the same action.
So the original S, M, or phi, or whatever you had.
Yeah, so the original action has the parameters of J, right?
Yeah.
That's the only information.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's the only information.
Yeah.
So,
So this is nothing but the one-dimensional gravitational theory written in the ADM formalism. Oh, why does it stop at J squared? Oh, yeah.
Just for the sake of simplicity, I could have included all higher. Then I have to include infinitely many bulk things.
Yeah.
So for each coupling, I have to introduce one thing.
Okay. So is this 1 over m squared, is this the expansion parameter?
That's right.
Okay,
yeah.
So what does it correspond to in like the string theory setting?
Is this not a physical expansion. That's just a...
No, I just want to see whether there is something, a vague connection.
Yeah, I think there's no connection for that. That's just our choice.
Just
kind of ways, yeah.
How to do the integration.
Yeah, it's not physically important. So one key difference here from the usual gravitational theory is that in usual gravitational theory, this left function is a dynamical variable which imposes Hamiltonian constraints. But in this case, this is not a dynamical variable, and we don't integrate out. The physics for that is that in order to reproduce the original partition function, we have to integrate out all modes from high energy mode to infrared mode. And which means that the actual RG distance should be fixed to be infinite. So we should not allow this physical distance, RG distance, to fluctuate. Okay? So in that sense, this is the gravitational theory in one dimension with fixed length in this direction. Okay, so physical length is not allowed to fluctuate. But in 1D, other than that, there's no physical distance. Everything can be gauged out. That's why this is not dynamical in this one dimension. No. That's right.
Actually, it's background theory, not dynamical theory for higher dimension.
So when does this work field?
In the higher dimension, whether you have similar feature that gravitational background gets a fixed background, it's not dynamic, don't integrate.
Yeah, it depends on the dynamics, and that classical feature arises only in the large limit. So usually this variables in the bulk is highly quantum, but in certain large limits, the fluctuations.
Oh. But here is a different. Here you say this classical background is a totally non-fluctuating
sense. Yeah. Everything else is gauging the risk field.
But this feature is not shared in higher dimension.
No. Yeah.
So, one of the key points is that this bulk action is local in the bulk. So one can do the same thing for real field theory. For example, I can apply the same procedure for O(n) vector model in D dimension. So I have, say, a quadratic action, and because this is a field theory, I have to introduce some UV cutoff, which is the details of regularization is not important. So M is some mass scale above which quantum fluctuations are suppressed by some regularization. And here's the quadratic term, and there are a lot of deformations. And in general, these deformations may break flavor symmetry, O(n) symmetry. And for each deformation, I introduce this new fluctuating field in the bulk. And then this partition function can be exactly written as a functional integration in D plus one dimensional field, J and P. For some local action for this J and P. And one key difference from the zero-dimensional theory is now we have a D-dimensional space. So therefore, as we go into the bulk, as we coarse grain, we have to rescale in space and time to make the action for the quadratic term to be invariant. So that gives rise to this naturally ADS space where the volume, spatial D-dimensional volume, shrink as we go inside the low energy limit.
UV or in the IR?
UV.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's the bare.
Yeah, bare coupling controls the field at the boundary. And everything else in the bulk is controlled by dynamics. You don't have to impose any
field information there. So this is a V plus one dimensional local quantum theory. It doesn't, and then it is defined in this, say, flat D dimensional flat space time to this semi-infinity line. And boundary value of this fluctuating field is fixed by the UV coupling. And in general, I can deform the theory by some source field whose spin is arbitrarily large. Right? For example, here I can deform almost flavor-dependent energy-momentum tensor-like deformation. Then for this source field, I have to have some bulk field which have those spins. So in general, we have to include high spin field in general, depending on the deformation of the boundary field. And then, of course, this theory is very complicated in D plus one dimension, but a simplification arises in the larger limit. So, for example, you have this bunch of tensor source, and then you can always decompose, say, rank two tensor into diagonal part and then some traceless part. And then you can take certain larger limit. And then in certain larger limit, the action become proportional to n manifestly. Then that means any singular field in the bulk become classical. Quantum fluctuation is controlled by 1 over n. Therefore, if you want to compute any property for the singular field, then you just need the set point approximation for this bulk action. And in this way, you can compute, say, critical exponent for some singular field, which reproduce the prediction of field theory.
You can E nicely this diffeomorphism invariance in the experiment. But you also get the diffeomorphism invariance.
Yeah, that's also a very good question. So there's no explicit diffeomorphism invariance. And that's due to the fact that I have chosen this slice of time. So my prescription explicitly breaks this diffeomorphism. So I have chosen some gauge, like in the Hamiltonian formalism. But somehow this symmetry is hidden.
There's a difference between a gauge theory that really has a symmetry, you fix the gauge, but you see that if you do your transformations, it's maybe complicated, but your theory, you can recover it, you can rewrite it in different gauges, or whether the theory just doesn't have the symmetry, like, shouldn't this be possible?
Maybe. So it will be better if we have some more covariant formalism, like.
And the only thing we ultimately want is, say, conformal invariance of the boundary. Beyond that, everything else.
And then the 5D series, the gravitation series, where you're just doing our view of the field theory, but there's some claim that this is related to.
Can always my hand put in some geomorphism. Can't you always generalize it because the only invariant quantity is around on the boundary. Is that true or not? I don't know about this question.
Why don't we save this for the question period?
Yeah. Actually, can I ask just one more question? It's different, which is I would have guessed it at best you'd end up with a gravity theory in bulk that had an Einstein term, but also R squared and higher powers of R that are equally important in the setting you're working. So it might have a good large n factorization, but it would not be a large stuff coupling in the string theory.
Yeah.
So is your gravity theory some very odd gravity theory with
right.
higher?
Yeah, so yeah, that leads to the next point. So actually, the theory that I showed, this theory in the bulk, is local. But this is local only when I include both singlet and non-singlet field in the bulk. But if I somehow want to probe on the singlet sector, and then if I choose to integrate out all non-singlet field in the bulk, then that theory becomes non-local, which is like saying that there are all high order terms which are equally important. So in general, so I think this is due to the fact this ON theory in the larger limit is a weakly coupled theory, so there's no clear separation in the scaling dimension. So which means that in the bulk, there are a lot of light modes. which are more or less, with whose mass are more or less equally spaced. So if you integrate out any set of mode, the resulting theory is highly non-local.
So flat-shifting source here.
Right.
It's so really physical here.
There's a deformation of the energy momentum tensor
I see.
In the boundary.
In the boundary. So
that becomes metric in
that's
the
border.
Can you show us the action in the Lagrange limit? Just so that you said you got the gas for it.
Yeah, I haven't. It's too complicated.
It's too complicated.
It's in my paper, but
okay,
you can work
it out.
Yeah. So when you, for example, just to illustrate idea, if you want to compute some correlation function of a singlet field, then you introduce some x-dependent source field at the UV boundary, and then you solve the equation, bulk equation motion, which is consistent with this boundary condition. And then you plug in the solution to the action, and then you get some action as a function of this boundary condition. And that is nothing but the generated function. From by second derivative, you can compute correlation function, etc. But one, as Shamit pointed out, this is a second order differential equation in the bulk. But we impose only one condition at the UV. So in order to have a unique solution, we have to impose another boundary condition, which is usually at IR. And those IR boundary condition here is imposed by dynamics. There is some IR dynamical action, which imposed the IR boundary condition. And actually, in this ON model, it takes exactly the same amount of effort to impose the IR boundary condition as we need, as we solve in user field theory.
Using the phase space formalism, the equation motion of first order, that means you only need to impose one boundary condition.
But you have one more gauge field. You have both J and P.
I see. You have to impose a P condition.
Yeah, that's right. And then you can also, this procedure works not only at the critical point, but away from critical point, and you can study spontaneous metric breaking. So this P is a dual field to this source field. So roughly speaking, this P is proportional to the slope of the J field along this new direction. This is like momentum, right? So if you look at the set point configuration in certain parameter region, it's flat in the bulk, which corresponds to the symmetric phase. But in certain cases, this J source field spontaneously develops an expectation value in the IR, which is nothing but having non-zero expectation value for this order parameter, which corresponds to the spontaneous symmetric broken phase. Yeah, so there's some general prescription to map a d-dimensional quantum field theory into d plus one-dimensional local theory. Of course, that dual theory is not always useful. Usually, it's highly quantum or it's highly non-local. But in certain limit, in certain large and strong coupling limit, hopefully, you can study those class of quantum field theory using classical degree freedom in one higher dimension. And every prediction made in this holographic description is consistent with the field theory prediction, say ON mode. So in the future, perhaps it will be interesting to apply this prescription to more strongly coupled theory, like a matrix model or non-form liquid theory, liquid in large and limit, etc. And big open question is, now we have a prescription to construct a holographic theory from a given quantum field theory. And then question is, what kind of property in the bulk make this theory dual to certain local boundary theory? And if we know the answer for that, perhaps we can try to classify some strongly coupled field theory using this classical bulk holographic theory. And as Andreas pointed out, this formalism explicitly breaks some deformative symmetry. And it would be nice to have some more covariant formalism. Thank you for your
So One of the issues that I always found intriguing in these ABS correspondence is that, more or less, by construction from the large internet, you get classical neurozero node-like group field theory.
Right.
We know that for general local field theories, you know, four dimensions, you would expect non-trivial fixed points with non-trivial exponents. Is there any way to understand that in this framework?
Can you repeat the last part?
Well, the question is how you get non-trivial fixed points, how you get non-trivial critical
exponents.
In particular, non-trivial critical exponents.
I mean, even in the larger limit.
Well, in the larger limit, we know they are classical, that's all.
It's not necessarily classical.
In many, well.
In matrix model, for example.
For example, this phi squared scaling dimension. That's not classical.
That's not classical. No, but in the ABS, when people study those superconductors and so on, they always end up with.
But there are also
the examples from the ABC. If you use any scaling exponent, you want it's not in the large end limits. You only have to use that.
This is so.
Yeah, for example, in matrix, some large superconductors. It's large end, but it's quite large to the point. And all the scaling dimensions are very large. Even in the
logic. Yeah.
Just follow up on my first question. That's so the P have no boundary condition. So in fact, even in the ultraviolet limit, P has to be integrated over at the boundary. That's correct.
Yeah. So.
So you only have boundary condition on J, not on P.
That's right.
Yes.
Yeah. In some sense, P is a pure
case. So free boundary condition.
Yeah,
Klebanov and Polyakov actually proposed a gravity dual to the ON vector model, which is it's a theory of higher spins in the bulk due to Vasilyev and others in Russia. Does your theory match that theory?
I believe, I haven't checked, but I believe that's a similar vector of this kind of theory.
If you could actually make that precise, that would be very interesting, because even writing down the action for that theory is very difficult.
Yeah, if you integrate all four non-singular sectors, then it would be a non-local theory, which includes all higher spin fields. But this theory is by construction exact.
You also have the vector field, phi field here. You can get the scaling dimension of the vector field.
But that cannot be computed by classical approximation because that non-singular sector is not.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah, in principle, but you cannot.
Related to that, in your discussion of the ON model, you seem to imply that you could choose how many sources, how many spins you could include, but isn't our gene flow going to generate lots of higher spins?
Yeah, but in this scheme, no higher order constant generate. If you, say, start with a 5-4, then at most you have 5-4 at each scale.
Why is that? When you do momentum shells integration, you normally generate.
That's because that effect has been traded with the fact that source fields now become fluctuating. So if you integrate a fluctuating source, then that will generate all higher results. But we don't have to have that.
Yes.